Vayigash elav Yehuda vayomer Bi Adoni yidaber na avdecha davar biosnei Adoni va'al yichar apecha be'avdecha ki chamocha kifaro. Then Yehuda approached him and said, "If you please, my lord, may your servant speak a word in my lord's ear, and let not your anger flare up at your servant, for you are like Pharaoh."
Hello, I hope I haven't kept you waiting. Come right over. Chair by the window. Comfortable?
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your editor, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Parshat Vayigash. Recording and first broadcast, Yom Chamishi, Thursday, the 7th day of Tevet, 5773, corresponding to December 20th. Vayigash, as you heard in the beginning, is the dramatic confrontation between Yehuda and Yosef. I'll talk more about that and then branch off into a little bit about Sunday. Sunday is a fast day. It's the Asara B'Tevet fast, the 10th day of Tevet, referred to in the Mishnah as Tzom Asiri, the fast of the 10th month, if you count from Nisan. Tevet is month number 10. Before we continue, Psalm 130, Tehillim Kuf Lamed. Shir ha-ma'alot mima'amakim karaticha Adonai. Adonai shima v'koli tehiena oznecha kashuvot l'kol tachanunai. Im avonot tishmorya Adonai miya amod ki imacha hasalicha l'ma'an tivarei. Ki viti Adonai kiveta nafshi v'lidvaro hochalti. Nafshi l'Adonai mi shomerim laboker, shomerim laboker. Yachel Yisrael el Adonai ki im Adonai hachesed v'harbe imo fedut. V'hu yifde et Yisrael mikol avonotav. Achinu kol beit Yisrael hanatunim batzara uvashivya ha'omedim bein bayam uvein bayabasha. Hamakom yirachem aleihem v'yotziyem mitzara lirvacha u'me'afela l'ora u'mishibud l'geula. Hashta ba'agala uvizman kariv v'nomar amen. Apologies are in order. Last week's show was only 23 minutes, half of the usual 46 minutes. Hanukkah was a very busy time, and I am very insistent on lighting candles on time, which according to Jerusalem custom is even earlier than regular, which puts it at sunset rather than at stars out, and traffic in Yerushalayim by bus and other vehicles is horrendous at that time of the afternoon, I would say especially on Hanukkah. So it took a very, very long time to get home. Anticipating that, my day got broken up, and then there were parties and other social engagements in the evenings, and or coming back and doing a whole evening of work on Torah Tidbits. And the week felt sort of like 2 weeks at least, and the show suffered because I needed to just do other things. Not that I don't like doing the show, and not that I don't consider it important. It just was the perfect sacrifice to make my time feasible. So I apologize for that, and I also apologize when Torah Tibbetz Audio does not get up on time by the different places where it's heard. So let me say it clearly. The first and foremost place to find Torah Tidbits Audio is www.tidbits.com. TorahTidbits.com, which is my Torah Tidbits website, and I put it up there immediately after recording. Then I send an email with links to Arut Sheva and to OU Radio, which means if you listen on either of those, it's already secondhand. So if you want to shortcut the procedure, you can try ttidbits.com. But if you're doing it on Arut Sheva, Israel National Radio, Israel National News, it gets up depending on when I send my two halves to them and when the people at the station are available to put it up into the live stream. And then it should get archived. New York has a different schedule. They're 7 hours behind us. And therefore, sometime on Thursday afternoon, the people in New York put it up on OU Radio if all things went well. Occasionally we get a foul up, misspelled something once in the email that I sent out, and the link was not accurate, and therefore it was producing nothing, and they couldn't put it up, and then I went out of town. Okay, you don't need to hear all of that, but that's the story. And I'm sorry when things don't go smoothly. We've been doing Torah Tidbits audio for about 15 years, and haven't missed too many weeks. Okay, I think that about covers it. Opening music. Last week, for Hanukkah, there was none. And let's forget about the past anyway. For this week, I have something which is an obscure TV show that ran one season back in 95 or 94. And it just fit to start the show with it. So you heard that. The second half, I already have picked out something else. That's something that will be more recognizable for a certain age range of people. And when you make the connection to the Parsha, it should cause at least a smile. So let me know if you catch it. I started by mentioning this dramatic confrontation between Yehuda and Yosef, as yet unknown to Yehuda whom he was standing before. But there are commentaries who are not so sure that Yehuda didn't catch on a little bit earlier. At the very end of Parshat Miketz, last week's Torah reading, we have a very dramatic cliffhanger. It's one of two sedras in the Torah that I think are worthy of the announcer getting on and saying, and stay tuned next week, same time, same station, for finding out what happens. And in the other one is Balak to Pinchas. This one very dramatic, where Yosef is really putting the pressure on his brothers and playing with their head a little bit, their heads. And he frames Binyamin, basically geared to see how the brothers are going to handle a situation where the other of Rachel's sons is there now in a situation of trouble, and how they're going to handle it. Years before, they took one of Rachel's sons and they threw him into a pit, and they faked his death, and they lied to their father. And he ended up being sold into Egyptian slavery, and ended up in prison, and then ended up as the viceroy of Egypt. And the brothers were responsible for an extremely serious sin and crime in the sale of Yosef. And Yosef, consciously or subconsciously, or a little bit of both, needed to engineer things to see what happens now. Have the brothers matured? Have they repented? How are they going to handle a situation where they can walk away from the other one of Rachel's sons, namely Binyamin, leave him in Egyptian slavery and go home to their father and just shrug their shoulders and say, tough luck, but this crazy guy in Egypt insisted on releasing us and keeping Binyamin, or do they do something about it? And it's at the beginning of this week's Parsha of Vayigash that we see what they did about it. Yehuda, who was originally the leader among the brothers and has seemed to have taken that position back, although he was out of favor among the brothers for a period of time after the sale of Yosef, especially when the brothers saw what everything, what the experience did to their father Yaakov, and they sort of blamed Yehuda for not being a little more, I guess, taking that role of leadership and saying, just let him go back to his father. This is not the way we're supposed to behave. But instead, he was the one who suggested taking him out of the pit and selling him to a passing caravan. So, for a while, the brothers were not so disposed towards Yehuda, and apparently now he takes that role again. He's the one who has personally guaranteed Binyamin's safety to Yaakov, and now he approaches the enigmatic leader of Egypt, the second in command in Egypt, with a plea to release Binyamin and to take him, Yehuda, instead, because Binyamin is particularly dear to his father. Their souls are intertwined, and the father would die without the return of Binyamin. That is a manifestation of a total change in attitude and behavior, which originated from the jealousy between Leah and Rachel, the mother of Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, Yisachar, and Zevulun, and Yosef, his mother Rachel, which led to Mechirat Yosef, the sale of Yosef, and which ultimately brought everybody down to Egypt. But here, chances just happened again, circumstances just happened again, and the other son of Rachel is in this situation, and Yehuda takes the bold position of confronting this ruler of Egypt. The Alshich, which I wrote about in Torah Tidbits, and I write about all the time because I think it's a very powerful point, asks about the abrupt change in the demeanor of Yehuda. At the end of last week's reading of Miketz, Yehuda is humbled, maybe humiliated, he's certainly quiet, and resigned to the fate that seems to have come to be for him and his brothers about having been caught, justly or unjustly, having stolen from this leader of Egypt. And he, in the name of all the brothers, said, take us all as slaves. What can we do? And all of a sudden, he wakes up in the beginning of Vayigash, and he switches from the lamb on its way to slaughter, which he was at the end of Miketz, to be the lion, which is the symbol of the tribe of Judah and of their patriarch Yehuda, son of Yaakov. And he risks his life in confronting this leader in Egypt. What made the change? And the Alshich's answer is, when Yosef said, no, I'm not, I'm a fair guy. Binyamin is the one that we found the silver chalice in his possessions. He will become my slave, and the rest of you go home. Once Yehuda saw that, he realized that they were not being punished like he knew they deserved and would have accepted, but that the only one being punished here was Binyamin, and Binyamin was not complicit in the sale of Yosef. All the other brothers were, or at least the sons of Leah. So Yehuda says to himself, I don't have to accept this like a lamb, and he roars and confronts Yosef to the point Well, Yosef can't hold back his emotions anymore. He breaks down, clears the palace, and reveals himself to his brothers. A very, very dramatic thing. Okay. Hold that thought. I know I usually use that phrase at the end of the half. When I say hold that thought, I'll be right back, or we'll be right back with more Torah Tidbits audio. I don't mean that now. I mean hold that thought because I would like to play some music now. The song is not referring to Parshat Vayigash at all. It's just a pretty song. This particular rendition by Avraham Fried. The words come from chapter 42 of Tehillim. Lam Natseach Maskil Livnei Korach. That's not part of the song. The song is made up of the second and third verse. Ka'ayal Ta'arog Alafike Mayim. Kein Nafshi Ta'arog Elecha Elokim. As a fawn squeals over a bubbling brook, so does my soul delight with God. Tzama Nafshi Lelokim Lekel Chai. My soul longs for the Lord, the living God. When can I ever come before Elokim? Matai avo ve'eira'e p'nei Elokim. Ka'ayal ta'arog Avraham Fried. Enjoy.
Alafi came a yim, came Nashi Saroy Gaylecho, Eloiki. Ayo, Taroy, Alafi came a yim, came Nashi Saroy, Eloiki. Alafi came a yim, came nafshi saroy geilecho elokim. Tzama nafshi leilokim lekeilcho.
Of course, you know we don't have commercials on Torah Tidbits Audio, except what Arut Sheva puts into their stream. But I do want to mention the book from which I read the translation of the Tehillim. It's a book called Tehillim, Psalms in Plain English. It appeals to me very much. It's the English rendition is by Aaron Lichtenstein, Dr. Aaron Lichtenstein, a cousin of the more well-known Rav Aaron Lichtenstein from the Gush. This is a fine fellow who I am pleased to know and chat with whenever he comes to visit Israel. And he first wrote a book that was published only in English, and I recommended to him that he try to do another edition with the Hebrew and this English. The English is our kind of talk, not the fancy usual translation of the Bible. And I recommend it. It's by Urim Publications, available wherever it's available. I don't know how much more Sedra summary I'm going to have time for. So, briefly, what happens following this confrontation is Yosef revealing himself to his brothers, and they cry, and they can't believe it, and then they believe it, and Yosef finally says, don't fret about it, and don't worry, this is God's plan, and don't waste your time recriminating, just go back and get our father and bring him down, because there is more famine coming, and we should be together, and we'll be well provided for here in Egypt, specifically in the area called Goshen. There's more, but what I want to do in the second half of the show is sort of elaborate on the lead tidbit this week in the hard copy, which was called After These Matters. That was a rough rendition into English of Achar HaDvarim Ha'ela, After These Things. And I have what to say about it, and it's not a fun kind of topic. Somebody came into my office and said, tell me something, tell me a chidush. And I told him that thought, and he said, not very fun, which is true. In any event, we'll be right back with more Torah Tidbits audio. Keep listening. You are listening to Torah Tidbits audio for Parshat Vayikash, and as I mentioned right before the midpoint, that I mentioned right before the midpoint was that I wanted to elaborate on the lead tidbit from the hard copy of Torah Tidbits. It goes like this, and the thoughts I think came naturally. I mentioned earlier that Hanukkah felt like a very long period of time. Usually holidays go by quickly. I felt like each day was 2 days worth because my time at the Israel Center was not continuous. It was broken by going home, lighting candles, staying for a while at home, and coming back, or doing something else in the evening, which was significantly separated from my earlier day. So I felt like it was a 14-day week. And then it was over. And it's over in two stages. Last Saturday night, Motzoi Shabbat, we lit 8 candles. But Hanukkah continues for the full 24 hours that follow. And then it's over again. And then comes Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and somewhere along the line, I started thinking as follows. The Parshat HaShavua of Vayeshev and then Miketz were all about the clash between Yosef and his brothers. the hatred the brothers had for him, the sale of Yosef, and all kind of negative things which we can't help but personalize, because they're brothers. And it's different from the previous Sedras, where we had the confrontation with Esav, even though he was Yaakov's twin. We, from our perspective of Jewish history, do not look at Esav as a brother. We look at him as an enemy. Not so with our fellow Jews. The confrontation with Lavan, even though he was Yaakov's uncle and Yaakov's father-in-law, twice over, and some say four times over, he's still an enemy. But the brothers are the brothers, the children of Yaakov, Shivtei Ka, the tribes of God. And look at what happened in the Sedras of Vayeshev and Miketz. Terrible stuff. But then, sometime this week, you look forward towards this coming Shabbat, which is Parshat Vayigash. I certainly do when I have to prepare a week's Torah tidbits, and I get into Parshat Shavua starting either Saturday night or Sunday morning, as we all should, but that's when I get into it. And all of the different Divrei Torah and the Sedra summary brings Vayigash. And Vayigash is very exciting, because the brothers reunite and reconcile, and Yosef reunites with his father who has mourned him in an abnormal manner for 22 years, never really believing that he was dead, being told that he was dead, and they get together and they kiss. Actually, it's Yosef who kisses Yaakov, but that's another story. And it's looking up. It's looking up. Then we go to the calendar. The calendar, as Kislev ends and Tevet begins, is also very uplifting. It's a 8-day celebration of Chanukah, full Hallel, all kind of fun stuff, no negative. In fact, it just dawned on me that even on Purim, which is a 1-day festival, or call it 2 days if you count our Purim together with everyone else's, but Megillat Esther brings you the story to the fore. On Hanukkah, it's not a public reading, it's a story, it has its downsides, but nobody has to tell the story, and you concentrate on other things. So it really doesn't get diminished at all by the depression of the beginning of the Megillah, if you want to say that, although I have another opinion on that. And the same thing with the Haggadah, where we start as slaves on Pesach and then come to freedom. Chanukah is a celebration of victories, wonders, and miracles. And things are looking up. The Parshat weekly portion is looking up, and the calendar is looking up. And then you look a little further to this Sunday, the 10th of Tevet, a fast day, one of four fast days related to the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. The Beit HaMikdash, that's the siege around Jerusalem, is what Asar HaTevet originally was, and that happened way before the Hanukkah story, but when we're looking at it from our perspective of history and looking back, the first Beit HaMikdash, the second Beit HaMikdash, the siege here, the siege there, destruction here, destruction there, and exile and exile sort of blends in, so that what we see is, 1 week ago, we finished an 8-day holiday celebrating the rededication of the Beit HaMikdash. And boom, a week later, Sunday the 10th, we're commemorating the beginning of the Churban all over again. The beginning of the destruction. What's going on? And then you go back to Parshat HaShavua, and you take a peek at the Haftarah, the reading from the prophets, and you see there that it's a prophecy for the future, which has not been realized, of the real reconciliation and reuniting of Yehuda and Yosef. In the Haftorah, it's Yehuda and Ephraim, same thing. And then you start to remember about the split in the kingdom after David HaMelech and Shlomo HaMelech, how the kingdom split into the kingdom of Israel and the kingdom of Judah. And very negative kind of things all the way through that period of history. And then you say, what happened to this amazing reconciliation and reuniting of the brothers in Parshat Vayigash? So you realize, and if you even look in the following week's Seder of Vayechi, you see it there too, that after Yaakov died, the brothers were not at all sure that Yosef, as much as he said it, was really, really forgiving of them. And they were scared, and they had right to be scared. And they end up in Egypt, which is where they are, and the very next thing we read about is oppression and slavery for 210 years, a total of 430 years, depending on where you start counting, and less than 210 if you count from the deaths of, or the death of the last of the brothers, which was Levi. And you see that things are not yet looking up. They're not. And they lived happily ever after. Not in the calendar, and not in Parshat HaShavua. And not yet in world Jewish history. Okay, I'm going to say it again. Hold that thought, not to end the show yet, but to take a musical break. And since we already used a track from the album of Avraham Fried, the album is called, by the way, The Time Is Now, I'd like to play another track. This one, Ve'einenu. And the words come from the Kedusha of Shabbat morning, Shacharit, where we say, Ve'einenu tirena malchutecha, may our eyes see your kingdom, kadavar ha'omur b'shirei uzecha, as it said in the songs of your splendor, al yedei David Mashiach tzidkecha, that were written by David, your righteous anointed one. Ve'einenu tirena malchutecha, Avraham Fried. And maybe we can listen to it, not just to enjoy, but put it into the perspective which will help us make sense out of what I'm going to continue talking about. And that is, we have not yet been privileged to the, and they lived happily ever after, and we lived happily ever after. We still have a way to go. We've come a long way. But the enmity of the brothers and the ramifications of it in later history are unfortunately alive and well today. That's Parshat HaShavua. The Beit HaMikdash has not been rebuilt. We are in a cycle of remembering and commemorating the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, a cycle which goes around the year. And the fact that we have the bright note of Chanukah, of a rededication during the time of the Second Temple, does not mean we're anywhere yet. I'll talk more about that after Avraham Fried with the Einenu.
Shiyah, al yedei David, Shiyah, 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 Shiyah,
Okay, maybe you should try to keep humming that song and let it go around and around in your mind and in your heart, because maybe that's my point. Ve'einenu tirena malchutecha. May we be privileged to see God's kingdom, which means the geula shlema, the final redemption. Let's go back a couple of steps. Chanukah is not a great thing because it's the end of the story. In fact, nothing that we celebrate is the end of the story. Im Yirtzeh Hashem, when there is a Geula Shlema, and a restoration of the kingdom, and a restoration of Sanhedrin, and a rebuilding of the Beit HaMikdash, whenever that happens, I would imagine there will be some kind of holiday to commemorate that event, and to celebrate that event, or those events. And then we could finally say, except for this. But nothing that we have. Think about it. Pesach is the beginning, the birth of the nation. Coming out of Egypt, great things. We're no longer slaves. We saw wonders and miracles like never before or since. But it was only the beginning of the road. Ma'amad Har Sinai, revelation at Sinai, was also a beginning. It didn't end anything. It's not, we finally have the Torah, and that's it. No, we now have the Torah, and we have a whole history in front of us. And we have to do good things, and avoid bad things. And our scorecard is not the greatest, but let's not dwell upon that at the moment. But certainly, coming out of Egypt and leaving Sinai with coming into Eretz Yisrael, it was still early. And then we came to Eretz Yisrael. And that was looking up, but that has a checkered history on its own. And then there's the building of the Beit HaMikdash. I mean, after a lot, after conquest and after Mishkan here, Mishkan there, Mishkan in Shiloh for 369 years. And then finally it comes after 480 years from the Exodus, roughly, until the building of the first Beit HaMikdash, and that had a tenure of 410 years. I mean, these are not small periods of time, unless you look back and look at the whole time frame. But if you're thinking in terms of 410 years, that's a long time. But things deteriorated, and there was idolatry and other things that plagued the people, and that led to exile and destruction, and then a call to come back, and that was only heeded by a minority of the people, and the rebuilding of the second Beit HaMikdash, which lasted a total of 420 years, nothing to sneeze at. And yet, there were problems with it. There were things that were missing from it from the beginning, from the get-go, as they say. And then Greek oppression, and then the Hanukkah story, But let's digress to that for a moment, not to review the Hanukkah story, but just to say Hanukkah shows us that we owe a debt of gratitude and a celebration of God's miracles and victories that He has allowed us, even when it is not the end we lived happily ever after yet. It's not all or nothing. Hanukkah is something. In our time, establishment of the State of Israel and Yom HaTzmaut is something. Is it the end? No. But it's certainly a significant something. And Yom Yerushalayim and the victory in the Six-Day War, is that the end? Obviously not. Look at all of the dissent that there exists in modern Israeli society about attitude towards that which was recombined and reunited as Greater Israel in 67. Why you have people saying, Di l'kibush, enough of occupation, and other people saying, what are you, out of your mind? That's not occupation. This is a reclaiming of land which God gave us. Why would you call this Jewish occupation of Arab lands? That's falling for the PR in a big way. Okay, let's not go down that road at this moment. I do it enough and we'll continue to do it. But that's not the point. The point is that the celebrations, Hanukkah, Purim, in our time, Yom HaTzmaut, Yom Yerushalayim, and whatever else you have, are way stations in a journey, hopefully in a positive direction, and they deserve to be celebrated. So I am not taking anything away from Hanukkah. And yet, we have that sense that Hanukkah so closely being followed by Asara B'Tevet indicates that after a brief euphoria of autonomy, things didn't continue to go well. The Greeks might have disappeared from the scene, but Rome was soon to follow, and that was partly our doing and asking for their help. And that eventually led to the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash, which then led to an exile far, far longer than the first exile, an exile which still exists, an exile which people are still in the process now of extricating themselves from. But that also is not the point here. The point is the smile that Hanukkah puts on your face, and the smile that Vayigash puts on your face, is taken away or is turned melancholy when we realize what still has to be accomplished. Marking the four fast days, that's Asara B'Tevet, Shivasar B'Tammuz, Tisha B'Av, and Tzom Gedalia, related to the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, serves as a continual reminder that we have an agenda that we're not properly paying attention to. Because the question is not, should we now build the Beit HaMikdash? That will happen. The question is, shall we not strive to improve ourselves as individuals and our community as a community and all of Israel as a nation, improve ourselves spiritually, religiously, socially, and everything else, so that there won't be a reason that the Beit HaMikdash should not be rebuilt, that there wouldn't be a reason that we wouldn't proceed into the Messianic era? And if you're not looking forward to that, that's part of the problem, so let's not get into that either now. But we need to become better and better people. The brothers had their problems with Yosef. Today, there are brothers that have their problems with Yosef. And the friction and tension between different segments of the Jewish population is mortifying, because it just keeps happening. So the fact that I have to tell you that the thing with the two sticks, one on which Yehuda was written and one on which Ephraim was written, that would fuse together into one, was a prophecy of the future which hasn't happened yet. And we know that it will happen, but we want it to happen now, in our time. But we need to work on it. On that note, Shabbat Shalom, Lehishtameah.